The prelude tonight is the Adagio and Alla Breve from Sonata No. 4 for Flute by Georg Friedrich Händel. Well, welcome to this celebration of three great church musicians. I want to say, first of all, that what you will need for tonight are the chorales by Händel and Bach, four-page sheet. You'll need the With One Voice, we'll sing out of that, and you'll need the Lutheran Book of Worship. Our musicians tonight are on the oboe, Jerry Clark, on the flute, Larry Hughes, on the nickel harp, standing over there, Carla Berglund, on the trombone, Michael Cobbler. Our conductor and soloist of the chorus is Robin Henry, standing right there, on the violin, Kathleen Olson, at the harpsichord and the piano and the organ and whatever else we need, Gordon Porth. Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, spent the last 6 months of his life suffering from eye trouble. He sat in darkened rooms and had two operations, both of which were unsuccessful, and in the last days of his life dictated to his son-in-law, Altnickel, a marvelous, almost flawless chorale prelude with the German title, I'll find it in a minute, Vor deinem Thron trete ich allher, before your throne I now appear. It's almost as if Bach knew that he was about to die and that he was about to appear before the throne of God, and he did so in the same deep piety and utter faithfulness with which he lived his life. On the 28th of July, 1750, 245 years ago, Bach died in the evening. There was a notice in the Leipzig papers the next morning, and on the 30th of July, he was buried in a very simple grave in St. John's Cemetery in Leipzig. It was another 100 years before anybody even put a marker on that grave, and still another 100 years, 1950, before Bach's body was transferred to the St. Thomas Church in Leipzig, where it now lies under a great red granite marker with the simple words Johann Sebastian Bach and the years of his life, 1685 to 1750. It actually took a bomb from World War II falling in the graveyard of St. John's to convulse the earth and bring his coffin toward the surface. It was then carried to a storage shed where it sat for 6 years before that final burial in the St. Thomas Church. But you can sit today in the Thomaskirche in Leipzig and see to the left of you Bach's grave, in front of you a great 19th century stained glass window with Bach in the window, and on the left the balcony where the organ was and where the Thomaner, the choir boys and the men who sing in the Thomaskirche choir, still sing and often still sing Bach's music. The reason for the observance on this day then is the death date of Bach. To Bach were added the names of Heinrich Schütz, who lived from 1585, he was born 100 years before Bach and Handel, to 1672, died before Bach and Handel were born, and then Georg Friedrich Handel, who was born the same year as Bach, but died 9 years later in 1759. We're going to do only their music this evening, and it's going to be marvelous. The first thing that will happen tonight is a choir anthem, Heinrich Schütz's setting of Psalm 96, Sing to the Lord a New Song, and we will follow that with a Handel hymn, Awake My Soul, on the sheets that you have. What we are doing is following roughly the church year, Advent, Christmas, Epiphany, Lent, Easter, Pentecost, but we're going to start with a rousing psalm of praise to God, sung by the choir, and then this hymn. wonderful. I want to just issue a modest disclaimer. We're going to sing all of the music and all of the words in the language that they were translated or composed. At Holden, we try to pay attention to more inclusive language. We just have to sort of bracket that tonight for the moment so that we can do all of this music. Let me say something for a moment about Bach's Leipzig years. Bach came to Leipzig in May of 1723 and spent the last 27 years of his life there. The town council, in its minutes, recorded that they had first offered the position to Bach's great contemporary, Georg Philipp Telemann, who was the music director of the city of Hamburg. He declined. Then they offered it to Christoph Graupner, who was the music director in the city of Darmstadt. He declined. Then they offered it to Bach, who had applied in February. And in the town's council minutes, they said, since the best could not be had, we settled for the middling. Woo! Well, so much for the Leipzig town council. They were kind of mean-spirited to the end. Bach arrived 4 weeks after the 1st of May, when he was to begin. And when he died, they docked Anna Magdalena's pension by those 4 weeks. 27 years later. Long memory the town councils have. Bach's title in Leipzig was to be cantor figuralis, which meant that he was to compose cantatas. He was not primarily the organist, although he did play organ, and he was the director of music for the city of Leipzig. So cantor figuralis, composer, director of music for the city of Leipzig. He provided music for the Thomaskirche, the Nikolaikirche, the Neukirche, and the Peterskirche, the four churches. St. John's was outside the city where he was buried, but he didn't do music for them. He was also the cantor of the Thomasschule. Duties he didn't always like. He had to teach Latin, catechism, and music, and he was often absent because he didn't like duty. He finally hired somebody to teach Latin to these schoolboys. He lived in a three-story apartment at the end of the building that housed the Thomasschule. There were about 50 boys there. They often ate in common. The sanitary conditions were awful. There are reports of rats floating in the water containers from which they drew their drinking water. Maybe one of the reasons why at least 10 of Bach's 20 children did not survive childhood. Well, one doesn't know. At any rate, one of the things that happened there is that Bach finally got an opportunity to compose the church music that he dearly loved to do. He wrote something like 200 sacred cantatas, about a 5-year cycle of cantatas, for the Thomaskirche, and then could use them again and again. He, in 1724, composed the St. John Passion, almost a kind of rehearsal for the great St. Matthew Passion, which was first performed in 1729. He had continual difficulties with the city council of Leipzig, but nevertheless went about his duties with enormous faithfulness. He wrote his cantatas basically to comment on the sermon, on the gospel that had just been read. The sequence of the liturgy at the church in Leipzig, a 3-hour Sunday morning liturgy that began at 7 and ended at 10, was that after the gospel was read, the cantata was sung, and then the sermon. Bach didn't always like the preachers at the Thomaskirche, and so he was very glad that he got the first word in, which was the cantata commenting on the gospel for the day. We're going to hear the choir now sing stanza 1 from Bach's of the hymn Wake, Awake, for Night is Flying. This is the chorale that forms the basis for Bach's cantata number 140. And after that, we will have a quartet singing another Schütz setting of Psalm 138, My Inmost Heart Now Raises. We need some filler. I'll do Heinrich Schütz at this point. Heinrich Schütz was born in 1585 in Kestritz, Saxony, and like Handel, began his university studies in order to be a lawyer. Marvelous that he changed his mind. A year later, he was sent to Venice to study with the great Viennese-Italian composer Giovanni Gabrieli, who wrote these marvelous trumpet canzoni songs for playing in the great St. Mark's Cathedral in Venice. He returned to Germany in 1612 after the death of Gabrieli to study more law, but within 2 years came to Dresden as court musician. And there, his primary contribution was to bring to German music the influence of the great Italian Renaissance musical composers. Gabrieli, of course, one of the best known, but there is where orchestral music first began to find its place, eventually leading to the work of Vivaldi, who was Bach and Handel's contemporary, and Corelli, who introduced symphonic music into the world. Schütz brought all of that to Germany without destroying the solid Germanic character of the music. The quartet is therefore now going to sing a setting of Psalm 138, My Inmost Heart Now Raises, the way Gabrieli would have done it from a balcony in St. Mark's, Venice.
Thank you.
The lives of these composers were not tranquil lives. We left Heinrich Schütz in Dresden as a court musician, but in the middle of his ministry, the 30 Years' War intruded into Germany's life. From 1518 until 1548, the warring Catholic and Lutheran armies that traipsed across Germany devastated everything in its wake. Cities burned, fields plundered, lives destroyed. Bertolt Brecht wrote bitterly about that war in his play Mutter Courage und ihre Kinder, Mother Courage and Her Children. Schütz himself was driven out of Dresden during the 30 Years' War and went to Denmark, where he served for a number of years as court composer in Copenhagen, and then gradually made his way back into Germany, to Brunswick and to Lunenburg. And finally in 1645, 3 years before the 30 Years' War ended, he came back to Dresden. There he served with great distinction and piety until he died on November 6th, 1672. His biographers say, noble in character, profound in piety. We're going to sing an Advent hymn of his, My Soul Now Magnifies the Lord, from the Lutheran Book of Worship, number 180. Number 180. And we're going to sing this. The women will sing stanza 1. All of us will sing stanza 2. The men will sing stanza 3. And all of us stanza 4. This will be followed by a lovely instrumental piece by Johann Sebastian Bach, the minuet number 2 from his Anna Magdalena book. Bach had married Maria Barbara, his cousin, in 1707. She died very suddenly while Bach was away on a trip in 1720, came home without communication to find that his wife had died and had in fact been buried in his absence. In 1721, he married Anna Magdalena Wilken, a wonderful woman. One of the sort of sad stories out of Bach's life is that he was once caught practicing music with Anna Magdalena in the balcony of the Thomaskirche, and women were to keep silent in the church. The town council from that moment on forbade Bach to have Anna Magdalena sing, even in practice sessions at the Thomaskirche. But Bach wrote lovely works for her and for his family, and they are preserved in the Anna Magdalena Buch. And what you have to imagine is his children with little instruments playing these minuets, and probably some of them marching around the table and doing the kind of things that are typical of family music in German. But now we'll do hymn 180, My Soul Now Magnifies. Again, women all, men all. Those four stanzas. I'm going to save some of Handel's life after we have, before, when we get to a solo from Handel's Messiah. But in the meantime, we're going to sing one of Handel's best known Christmas hymns. The music, the text is by Isaac Watts, composer of the 18th century, but the music is by Handel. It is number 39 in the Lutheran Book of Worship, Joy to the World, and we'll sing two stanzas of that hymn. Why don't we stand to sing it?
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. King, let every heart prepare him room. Heaven and nature sing. Joy to the earth. Repeat the sounding joy.
Marvelous. All right. Now, one more instrumental piece from Johann Sebastian Bach that takes us into Epiphany. This is the hymn, How Brightly Shines the Morning Star. Again, one of the great chorales written by Philip Nicolai in the 17th century, and set to music by Bach in the 18th. Georg Friedrich Handel was born in Halle, just about 30 kilometers from Leipzig, a month before Bach, February 23, 1685. His father, Georg, was a successful surgeon in Halle. His mother, and we've researched this through all the books available in Holden, and we never did find her name, was the daughter of a Lutheran pastor. Handel studied law at Halle beginning in 1702, but he was also to pay expenses, organist for 1 year at the Reformed Cathedral in Halle. He had an excellent musical education prior to that. There's a story that his father didn't want him to study music, but the fact is his father was quite happy to have Handel study music. He met, among other things, Georg Philipp Telemann in 1701. They became great friends, and this had a decisive impact on Handel's career. Händel never met Bach, though they knew of each other, and Bach at one point tried to arrange a meeting when Händel was visiting Halle in 1729, but because of Bach's own illness, he sent his son, Wilhelm Friedemann, to meet with Händel. And they knew of each other's music, copied from each other, which everybody did in those days without copyrights. They have one other interesting link. In 1703, Händel went to Lübeck, where he wanted to succeed the great Dietrich Buxtehude as organist and director of music for the city of Lübeck. But the condition to succeed Buxtehude was you had to marry his daughter. There wasn't any social security in those days, and good old Buxtehude was not going to retire before he had somebody in place with whom he could live out his life. But as the story says, his daughter was nicht besonders schön, that is, not very attractive. Now, 2 years later, Bach went to Lübeck. He walked all the way from 1707, he was in Arnstadt. He walked all the way from Arnstadt to Lübeck, which was about 300 kilometers, 200 miles, and also aspired to succeed Buxtehude, also was given the same condition, also said, thumbs down. So neither of them ended up as Dietrich Buxtehude's successor. Händel did, however, go to Hamburg, where Telemann recommended him, and there he began his lifelong career of composing basically theatrical works. First operas, he had gone to Italy in 1707 with a national reputation, came back from Italy with an international reputation. In 1710, he was appointed court musician to the Elector of Hanover, who had the right of succession to the British throne. And in 1711, he went to England, where he continued his very successful career of composing operas for stage production. In 1714, the Elector of Hanover became George I of England and immediately made much use of Händel for English court occasions. Händel became an English citizen in 1726 and devoted the rest of his life to all kinds of civic, charitable, and musical activities. In 1740, however, now 55 years old, he went through a period of real depression because opera ceased to be a means of a livelihood for him. In the midst of this, from Dublin came an invitation to come and do some composing for charitable purposes. And there, in about 22 days, from August 22nd to September 14th, 1741, Händel composed Messiah. He had now turned to the oratorio, which was also basically a theatrical production. But instead of staging it and acting it out as one did with opera, it was simply sung in concert, nevertheless still dramatic. Händel's text and music was first performed in public. He had some private performances, but first performed in public for a charity in Dublin, Ireland on the 13th of April, 1742. It was an instant hit and has remained a kind of smash ever since. We're going to hear now the solo, "He Shall Feed His Flock," from Händel's Messiah. We're going to turn now to the second of the chorales in the folders that you have. And this is Bach's O Sacred Head Now Wounded. We're going to sing the first two stanzas in harmony, the third stanza in unison. I want to point out only one thing about this gorgeous chorale, and that is that Bach uses it in two places. He uses it in the Christmas oratorio, and then again in the Great Passions, St. John and St. Matthew. Why Christmas and the Passion narratives? What holds them together? I think we understand this if we recognize that there are two Christmas stories in the New Testament. We always hear only the Lucan one, which is nice and simple and pastoral, angels and a baby and a manger and Mary and Joseph blithely going their way back to Nazareth. But in Matthew's Christmas story, we have a very bloody tale, full of intrigue and jealousy and murder itself, finally, the murder of children. In Bach's Christmas oratorio, he encompasses both of these Christmas narratives, something we don't do anymore. And therefore, he is able to link the Christmas with the Passion narratives. It would be intolerable to hear the Matthew story and to say Jesus escapes at the expense of the murdered infants in Bethlehem. But the whole of the gospel is Jesus does not escape. God does not leave his world to suffer on its own. God suffers in the midst of the suffering of the world. And Bach, the theologian, understood this and links, therefore, the Christmas and Passion narratives with this marvelous, marvelous chorale. The first two we'll sing in harmony all together, and the third stanza in unison.
Thank you.
We have an instrumental interlude from the Concerto for Oboe by Handel.